I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. U.S. President Donald Trump is just days into his presidency and is intensifying pressure on Russia to begin peace talks with Ukraine. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
Newly sworn-in U.S. President Donald Trump renewed his calls Thursday for both parties to end the war.
Our efforts to secure a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine are now hopefully underway. It's so important to get that done.
On Wednesday, Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform that while he does not want to hurt Russia, it must reach a peace deal or face, quote, high levels of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov dismissed the threats Thursday.
We do not see any particular new elements here. We remain ready for dialogue.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
A U.S. federal judge on Thursday temporarily blocked President Trump's order ending birthright citizenship. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Judge says the president's move is blatantly unconstitutional. He's issued an order blocking action the president took shortly after taking office in the first hearing of a multi-state challenge. Opponents argue the Constitution's 14th Amendment guarantees citizenship for those born and naturalized in the U.S. The president's order says kids of non-citizens don't qualify. 22 states and some immigrants groups are part of five suits across the country challenging the president's order. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement only has a fraction of money it needs to detain people living in the U.S. illegally. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
The Trump administration has not said publicly how many immigration detention beds it needs to house people in the U.S. illegally while they're being processed and arrangements are being made to deport them. But Immigration Customs Enforcement has a budget only to detain about 41,000 people, and there are an estimated 11.7 million people living in the U.S. illegally. The Department of Homeland Security estimates that it'll cost about $165 per day for a bed for one adult. Right now, ICE detains immigrants at its processing centers, privately operated detention facilities, local prisons, and jails. But it has no facilities to detain entire families. And families account for about a third of arrivals at the U.S. southern border. I'm Donna Warder.
President Trump on Thursday promised global elites lower taxes if they bring manufacturing to the U.S. and threatened to impose tariffs if they don't.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth. We're bringing them down very substantially, even from the original Trump tax cuts. But if you don't make your product in America, which is your prerogative, then very simply, you will have to pay a tariff.
The president made the remarks in an address to the World Economic Forum. Hundreds of LGBTQ plus couples in Thailand on Thursday registered their marriages legally on the first day a law took effect granting them the same rights as heterosexual couples. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
As the Marriage Equality Act comes into law, Thailand has become the first country in Southeast Asia and the third place in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. On Thursday, several hundred couples completed the formalities at a day-long gala celebration in an exhibition hall in central Bangkok. At the event, Raya Ruchaya Nilalan told the AP,
"It means the world to everyone for Thai, because then now we can express our love in public."
Thai Prime Minister Pitonthan Chinawatra addressed the crowd by video message and offered her congratulations, saying all couples can now live with honor and dignity in Thailand. Rights advocates have struggled for decades to pass a marriage equality law in a largely conservative society where members of the LGBTQ plus community say they face discrimination in everyday life. I'm Karen Chamas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Trump pressures Russia to end the war against Ukraine as the Kremlin shrugs off the threat of sanctions.
Our efforts to secure a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine are now hopefully underway. It's so important to get that done.
A Zimbabwe-born professor says he is confident that President Mnangagwa will not extend his term in office. There are mixed reactions to South Sudan's effort to shut down social media. A Gabonese pro-democracy activist says the country's military junta hurriedly scheduled a presidential election in April.
I am surprised because we are talking about election and we don't even know who's running and who's not running. And for me, an election is critical when you have somebody that you're running against.
And Malawi turns to Kenya for fuel supplies. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Just days into his presidency, Donald Trump is increasing pressure on Russia to begin peace talks with Ukraine. On Thursday, Moscow dismissed Trump's threats that the United States will impose new sanctions and tariffs on the Kremlin if it refuses to end the war. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
2,000 casualties injured by a Russian missile strike Thursday in the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed the attack on his Telegram account and called for more sanctions against Russia. Newly sworn-in U.S. President Donald Trump renewed his calls Thursday for both parties to end the war.
Our efforts to secure a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine are now hopefully underway. It's so important to get that done.
On Wednesday, Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform that while he does not want to hurt Russia, it must reach a peace deal or face, quote, high levels of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov dismissed the threats Thursday.
We do not see any particular new elements here. We remain ready for dialogue.
The United States under Trump has leverage, some analysts say. Stephen Pfeiffer is an international security and cooperation expert with the Brookings Institution. He spoke via Zoom.
He could continue to provide arms to Ukraine. He could move to take advantage of the $300 billion in frozen Russian central bank assets.
Matthew Schmidt is an associate professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. He was interviewed via Skype.
The best leverage that the U.S. has is that it can continue to hold together its European allies and bring along China.
At the World Economic Forum in Davos, NATO's Secretary General Mark Rutte said the European Union must increase financial support for Ukraine now because a Russian victory would be even more costly to the alliance in the long run.
There will be trillions extra because if Ukraine loses, then to restore the deterrence of the West, of NATO, again, it will be a much, much higher price than what we are contemplating at this moment in terms of spending up, of ramping up our spending and ramping up our industrial production.
Rutte also warned that a rushed but unfavorable peace deal for Ukraine would be geopolitically a, quote, big mistake. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
A Gabonese human rights and democracy activist says the country's military junta hurriedly scheduled an election because it wants to create an environment of stability in a country that he says is running out of money. The junta announced on Thursday that presidential elections will take place April 22nd this year to end military rule, which began with the coup on April 30, 2023. However, military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema has yet to say if he will run for president. Gabonese rights and democracy activist Frank Jokting tells me the opposition is quiet, having been blamed for the country's problems prior to the military takeover.
Well, I'm surprised and I'm not surprised. I am surprised because it's very quickly. It's sooner than I thought. And I'm surprised because we are talking about election and we don't even know who's running and who's not running. He has not claimed that he will be running, but everybody is expecting that he's running. Second of all, I don't know who are the other candidates. And for me, an election is credible when you have somebody that you're running against. And right now, nobody has stepped out and said that they want to run for president.
So let me ask you, if you say you don't know whether he's running or not, why do you think General Oligay set this particular date?
For me, he set the date because he has to create an environment to stabilize the country. Why he needs to stabilize the country? Because the country is running out of cash, is running out of money. The money has been mismanaged. The Gabonese also are realizing that all he promised is not fulfilling them, so his popularity is coming down. So it's better for him that the election is sooner than later. And then also, he doesn't have the funds, I think, to be able to run the country.
If you say you don't know whether General Oligay is going to run and you don't know who is going to run against him, what do you know about the official opposition? Or is there any opposition at all?
The problem is that when Oligay came, he told the Gabonese people that the problem that Gabon was in is because of the politicians. So right now, politicians, I'm not going to say that they're afraid, but he vilified politicians. So I think that's why the opposition right now are not saying they're observing him. And he himself has not claimed that he's running for president yet. He hasn't said that he's running. So that's why I believe that the politicians who are part of the opposition are reluctant to say that they're running before Oligay said that he's running. I think that when he will declare his candidacy, then I think that we will start to see other people coming forward. I think so.
You mentioned that the international community is reluctant to lend money to Gabon. Why?
Because Gabon has not managed the funds that was given to Gabon properly. And I think that there was a lot of embezzlement. If you look at Gabon right now, there's a lot of scandals about misuse of funds. Many men and women in the government of Oligay Nguema have been accused of embezzling money. As a matter of fact, a lot of them came, they were just regular folks. And in less than 16 months, they are now billionaires in franc CFA and millionaires in euros or dollars. So I think all of this is creating an environment where people are saying, we are not going to participate in that. We are not going to give money to a country where the money that is given is not used for the right purpose. So it's not helping the Gabonese people and it's not helping Gabon be a stable country. The second thing is that we need to remember that Oligay Nguema is a military guy. And today we all know that the international community do not want people to take power through a coup. And unfortunately, that's what he did.
Frank Joktin is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. A Zimbabwe-born professor said he's confident that President Emmerson Mnangagwa will not extend his term in office beyond the constitutionally mandated 2 terms. The ruling ZANU-PF party has urged the president to extend his term in office and delay the 2028 elections. The Zimbabwe heads of Christian denomination this week called on the president to uphold the constitution. Elio Masucha is a professor of business and political science at the Vrije University in Columbus, Ohio. He tells me that the President Mnangagwa will respect the constitution because he wants to be remembered as a good president who did not accept the urge to remain in power.
I don't think he's going to accept another term because he has already said so multiple times that he is not going to accept a third term, whether people like it or not.
The ruling ZANU-PF is appealing for him to do just that.
Exactly. They have a right to appeal to do just that, but they don't have the right to force him. They don't have the right to force Zimbabweans. Well, those are some members of parliament. Of course, they represent people, but it doesn't mean people they represent like President Mnangagwa at his age to run for the third term. And again, it goes far beyond just changing the constitution that people are talking about, because it involves a lot, unifying, you know, the party, you know, unifying the country. We have SADC, and we also have some international organizations as well. And fortunately or unfortunately, we are using the U.S. dollar as our main currency. It definitely is going to involve the United States of America as well, with its constant efforts, good efforts over the years to sponsor Democrats, of which I don't think his acceptance to run for a third term, if it is going to happen at all, I don't think it's something that is going to be taken lightly by Zimbabweans, by ZANU-PF, all ZANU-PF members, by SADC, and by the international community, including the United States and its allies, because they have investment in Zimbabwe as well.
What is the role of the Zimbabwe parliament? Do they have a say in whether the president can run for another term?
They are trying to change the constitution, and they have the right to change the constitution, which is, to me, it's a very small part for President Mnangagwa to accept to run for the third term, because he's going to make a wide consultation. And remember, when he was inaugurated, he made a commitment that he is going to be a listening president to everybody in Zimbabwe, the opposition included, and also those people who don't align with anybody. And church organizations have come out a few days ago discouraging the president to accept that third term offer. So I don't think President Mnangagwa will accept that. And my belief is that President Mnangagwa, of course, he may support the amendment of the constitution so that he will maintain his no and leave with a good name, that you see what has happened here. He was offered a third term and he said no, and he is a good guy. So he wants to leave with a good name.
Of course, as you said, the President Mnangagwa said before that he would not seek another a third term. This is not a guarantee, because if you look around Africa, there's so many heads of state or presidents who are trying to change the constitutional requirement to stay in power.
The reason why he got in power in the first place was to make sure Zimbabwe was going to be returned into constitutionalism, where he got in power committing to follow the current constitution and saying he's not going to run, you know, for a third term. And he said he already knows the date and the time he's going to get out of power. So I don't think he wants to leave Zimbabwe along the lines of those African leaders who are changing the constitutions and who don't want to leave power. I don't think that's the reason why he went in power in the first place. And I don't definitely think he wants to go that way, because to him, he knows the dangers of going that way, of staying in power, far more than just saying, well, I did my part and I'm going to leave for someone else, as he has committed to do.
Elliot Masucha is a Zimbabwe-born professor of business and political science at the Wright University in Columbus, Ohio. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 24. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. South Sudan's National Communication Authority ordered Facebook and TikTok to shut down for at least 30 days. This in an effort to control what it calls misinformation following reports of Sudanese troops killing South Sudanese civilians. Some social media users in South Sudan say the shutdown will affect their personal and business communications, while others say the decision will de-escalate tension related to the reported killings in Sudan. Mohamed Ibrahim Kour reports for VOA from Malakai, South Sudan.
South Sudan's National Communications Authority instructed telecommunications companies to suspend Facebook and TikTok as of Wednesday night. Telecommunications companies such as MTN and Zain shared circulars informing users of the action. The country's media regulator says online posts escalated tensions across the country through the sharing of videos showing what appeared to be Sudan Armed Forces troops killing South Sudanese civilians after the army took control of Wad Madani in Sudan. Sisi Alam is not pleased with the government's decision.
First of all, it didn't affect me so much, because these days we use the internet for communication. for business or even official work. But it's been very big to connect with my family through the internet. It's actually very sad seeing such videos that are being posted online.
Lem Munyog, who lives in Malakal, says the government has cut itself off from information by shutting down TikTok and Facebook. He says the government should target individual social media accounts that spread hate speech and allow the free flow of information on social media.
If you live with them, you do not know them, who is against you, who is with you, then even you cannot know what to do. So it's better to leave the social media operating all the time in South Sudan because it has become a source of getting information. You cannot live in current modern world without information.
Boyne Lam disagrees. He argues South Sudanese do not make money from social media platforms and they are a distraction to the youth. He says the Facebook and TikTok shutdown will not affect him.
There is a different platform that you can communicate because the media is not only Facebook and TikTok. Even though they blog it, it's not like that is a big thing that they should do. So you go to TikTok and then it is not helpful even, by the way. You can spend your full day, you are on TikTok, Facebook also. It's still a distraction for the youth if we are telling us the truth. It cannot be productive because you cannot learn something new rather than to get negative words there from Facebook.
Under the order, Facebook and TikTok are suspended for a minimum of 30 days and a maximum of 90 days. The communications authority says it will revoke the order as soon as the tensions ease, adding that the order is aimed at public safety and the mental health of vulnerable people. For VOA News, I am Amir Abraham Kwad, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Malawi has turned to Kenya for assistance in addressing the fuel shortage it has faced over the past 4 months under its government-to-government importation deal with the United Arab Emirates. The Kenyan government has helped Malawi procure 40,000 metric tons, or about 51.5 million liters, of diesel and petrol combined from Abu Dhabi. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
This assistance comes weeks after the Malawi government began efforts to establish its own government-to-government fuel supply agreements with Gulf countries. In December, President Lazarus Chakwera visited the United Arab Emirates to kickstart the negotiation of a fuel procurement deal under the government-to-government methods. However, authorities say the Malawi's fuel shortages, which started in October last year, have been caused by a lack of foreign exchange to pay suppliers. Clement Kanyama is the chief executive officer for the National Oil Company of Malawi.
The challenges you have seen on the stock outs is because we import less because we have not paid the suppliers.
The problem is forcing some people to spend long hours in fuel lines. Drivers of passenger service vehicles are relying on black market fuel, where prices per liter have quadrupled. These additional costs are being passed on to commuters who now pay fares that have doubled in price. Mese Chunda lives in Zimbangwa Township and works as a shop assistant in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre.
I used to pay 1,000 kwacha, now we're paying the same distance, 2,000 kwacha. So this is really hard for me, rather, because the budget and the salary is still the same.
Chunda hopes the coming of the Kenyan government facilitated fuel would help solve the problem. Ibrahim Matola is the Minister of Energy in Malawi. He says the move signals the end of fuel shortage situation in Malawi.
Let me assure the Malawians that the policy shift of His Excellency Dr. Lazarus Makate Chakwera of buying fuel on government to government, but also on bulk system, has indeed started.
However, Malawi Energy Regulatory Authority officials say the fuel which Kenya has facilitated is shipped through the port of Tanga in Tanzania, and it is expected to stabilize the fuel situation in Malawi for at least a month. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
Panic is spreading in Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo as M23 rebels encircle the city, battling the DRC army. The Associated Press reports that many civilians are being wounded in this crossfire, stretching the main hospital. The rebel group has been making significant advances in recent weeks, closing in on Goma. The city is home to around 2 million people and is a regional hub for security and humanitarian efforts. The Rwanda-backed M23 is one of about 100 armed groups that have been vying for a foothold in the mineral-rich eastern DRC in a decades-long conflict that has created one of the world's largest humanitarian crises. The Gambia's former dictator, Yahya Jammeh, has said he intends to be back in control of his political party and declare that he is coming back in an audio message obtained by the French news agency AFP on Thursday. Jammeh ruled Gambia for 22 years, presiding over a regime accused of carrying out torture using death squads and many other abuses. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with cricket as South Africa under-19 women are through to the Super 6 stage of the ICC under-19 Women's T20 World Cup following their resounding victory against Nigeria under-19 women in their final group stage encounter. The match was reduced to 8 overs per side after rain interrupted play. South Africa delivered a composed performance, scoring 49 runs in their allotted overs. The junior protest restricted the Euro Greens of Nigeria to 24-8, claiming a comfortable 41-run victory to remain unbeaten and secure the top spot in Group C. Despite their loss against South Africa, Nigeria finished second in Group C and also stamped their ticket into the next round, where they will face England on Saturday in the first Super Six clash before meeting Ireland next Wednesday. And onto athletics, where Ethiopia's Wokenish Edessa returns to the Osaka Women's Marathon as a course record holder, aiming to retain her title at the World Athletics Platinum Level Road Race on Sunday. Edessa took more than 2 minutes off the course record last year, matching her personal best of 2 hours, 18 minutes, 51 seconds, set in Berlin in 2022. She won by 8 seconds from Japan's Hanami Maeda, who clocked an Asian record of 2 hours, 18 minutes, 59 seconds. This time, Edessa's competition includes Japan's Mizuki Matsuda and Natsumi Matsushita. Edessa won 2 of the 3 marathons she contested in 2024. In football news, Morocco aims to complete construction of a 115,000-seater stadium in Benslimane near Casablanca by 2027, 3 years before the World Cup. It is co-hosting with Spain and Portugal. Morocco's Minister Delegate for Budget, Fawzi Lagjoa, said the stadium, one of the largest in the world, will cost up to $500 million to build. The stadium is competing to host the opening and final round of the World Cup alongside the Santiago Bernabeu in Madrid and the Camp Nou in Barcelona, according to a FIFA report. And on to tennis, where Kenya won 3 gold at the International Tennis Federation ITF Confederation of African Tennis Eastern African Junior Team Championships 2025 that concluded on Thursday at the Nairobi Club. Thursday's performance follows Kenya's first week success, where the host nation claimed 5 individual titles. Meanwhile, ITF Development Officer for East and Central Africa, Ntuwale Thierry, announced that Kenya will host the Under-14 Africa Junior Championships at the end of February. And finally, 44 rally drivers have confirmed their participation in this weekend's Federation of Motorsport Clubs in Uganda NRC calendar opener, popularly known as the Mambara Rally. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
Hello, this is Lina Khmudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30 UTC.